Lucy, I'm home.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. I am your co-host, Erica.
And I'm Ziva.
And today's episode we are recapping is Drafted, which is the 10th episode of the first season. It is not the 10th. It's the 11th episode. This is starting Ooh. Good. We're doing well. We're keep rolling. Now,
yep.
The synopsis here is that Lucy intercepts a letter for Ricky that asks him to appear at a local army station, you know, kind of like a performance with his band and such. And she becomes convinced that he has been drafted right away. No questions asked, just assumes it. Mm-hmm. And when Ricky asks Fred to join him, Ethel thinks the same. They begin knitting their husband's going away presents. And Ricky and Fred, however, think the girls are pregnant. Now, from that synopsis alone, none of that made sense. Not a single thing. And which is why I must tell you, I don't think I've told you this before. This is on my list of least liked episodes because of that reason. Yeah. None of it makes sense and none of it goes together. And you have to suspend that belief of reality that people behave this way. You know? So
we'll talk about it.
Yeah. So
this initial episode thoughts.
Yeah.
Was pretty much identical to George's Drafted, Liz's Baby,
mm-hmm.
episode 115 of My Favorite Husband. Now, I don't know that I've actually said this out loud, guys, but if you are interested in listening to My Favorite Husband and you haven't, or you don't know where to find it, it is all free online. I think I literally just looked up, you know, listen to My Favorite Husband or something, put that in Google, and it popped up.
Yeah.
Things like old radio shows or something, and you can listen to the old radio shows, which is super cool. But they have all the episodes on there. You can even download them if you want. So if you're interested in that.
Yeah, it's really fun to compare.
Really, really good.
Yeah. To compare the two, the I Love Lucy episodes to the radio ones. And this one was actually aired on Christmas Eve of 1951. And I think at the end of it, this one.
Did it have a lot of viewings?
On Christmas Eve? That's doubtful. Although.
I want to look that up because
I wonder if people made it a thing.
I remember.
Yeah.
That they had a lot of things, but.
I mean, this is the one where they're all dressed.
They weren't that popular then, you know? Like, I mean, they were just getting started, is what
right.
I'm saying.
This is
the 11th episode. So it's not like, you know, at the end where they're a household name and they could probably put something on Christmas Day and everyone would watch it, you know?
Yeah, we should get the Nielsen ratings on. This episode in 1951.
We'll look it up.
So they're all dressed up as Santa Claus. This is what they tag it at the end.
We're just jumping to the end.
No. I'm saying when it aired on Christmas Eve, they tagged that Christmas when they're all dressed as Santa Claus. Okay, so she...
It's not in the DVD, I don't think. But anyways, yes.
Yeah, so. It opens up the episode with her cleaning up, Lucy cleaning up, and Ethel brings up the mail.
Ethel's again starting stuff.
She's so nosy. I mean, although if you notice, she changes throughout the series. She's not always this person, you know. She's always ready to scheme, but I don't think she's as nosy as they made her the last two episodes.
Maybe not as nosy. Yeah.
Yeah, not as nosy.
But she still like reads people's mail. So like, yeah, it's the whole thought that like she comes up, she's got the mail. She's like, you have a postcard.
Yeah.
The postcard is, shall I read it? It says,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dear Ricky and Lucy, having a wonderful time here in Miami, leaving tomorrow for the Everglades. And that's what one of the things that she couldn't read. And Ethel was like, it's Everglades. Ben's been fishing and last week caught 150 pound starfish, getting a wonderful tan. We'll call you when we get home next week. Love, Edna and Ben. Who are Edna and Ben?
The Bishes. Those are the ones who wrote to him. It's a fictional friend.
Right, I mean, it's like, okay.
Yeah. And so.
You said it like I was supposed to know. And
I was like, I said it like Ethel did they're when she friends. Memorized the postcard. Right. I'm like, the Bishes, hello. And she, Lucy's all upset and, you know, appalled that Ethel has, read. Now, let me ask you this.
But not truly appalled, I think.
No, not really. Let me ask you this. Letters is one thing because you're
Postcards are different.
You're invading, you know, opening the envelope and stuff. But postcards, say you were to deliver your neighbors and they ask and it's right in front of you. Are you reading the postcard, Ziva?
If they're my best friend, probably.
And if they're not?
I'll just be honest. I'll just be honest. If they're my best friend, yeah, probably. if they're not my best, so like for if some reason I got my neighbor's mail,
right,
I wouldn't open it. Like, or even their postcard, like if I would just give it back to them.
Yeah.
Because that just seems like an invasion of privacy still. Like it's still a letter, whether or not it's in an envelope or not, it's still someone writing to someone else.
Yeah, that's true.
But if it was my best friend, for sure. So I don't know that I blame Ethel.
But memorizing the thing.
That, she does that for everyone's in the apartment, I think. So.
Yeah, especially since she's the landlady, so she's got access to all the mail, probably. So she's upset and she says it's a federal offense to you know, she gets all up in arms about it. And then, of course,
Ricky and I never do that.
No, we respect each other's privacy.
Until
there's a letter from the War Department. Yeah. And she accidentally opens it and Ethel's like, oh, cheap glue.
You know what? I have to say that I really love how, like, even after Lucy's just kind of like told her off about looking at her mail, she still got her back. You know, she didn't point out that like Lucy's just become a hypocrite.
Yeah.
You know,
no, she's on board. She's on board.
And she can fix it, you know? Yeah. And I think that's cool because some people be like, you were just saying hello.
Well, but also she wants to know what's in the letter.
True. She's nosy. So we're going to do our history lesson early.
Let's do it.
Cool. Fort Dix. I just thought that that would be the one to do because this is where he's going, right? Fort Dix is a U.S. military installation located in Burlington County, New Jersey. It was established in 1970. It was made permanent, garrison, and named Fort Dix in 1939. Primarily, mission of the fort was to mobilize, train, and deploy army troops. It also provided financial administration and logistical support. A major training center for the reserve component soldiers and includes the Army Reserve and the National Guards. So it was made up. It's part of the Joint Base McGuire-Dix Lockhurst. So it's an installation of three different, the McGuire Air Force Base, the Naval Air Engineering Station in Lockhurst. Okay. It's actually 32,000 acres. So during just a little bit more, during World War I, the fort was used mostly for training, staging ground, and then became the largest military installation in the Northeast, which is interesting. After the war, camp became it was a demobilization center, basically, you know, figuring out what they're going to do with everything from the war. During World War II, several army divisions and smaller units were trained at the base, and after the war, the base operated as a separation center. And then lastly, during the Vietnam War, Fort Dix underwent like a pretty rapid expansion. Mm-hmm. It had a mock Vietnam village, which I find very interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, for training and things like that. The base became part of the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command in July 1973. And the base realignment and closure commission recommendations of 1988 resulted in the end of active army training at the fort. So there's no active army training there currently.
Is it? It's still open then.
Okay. Fort Dix is still someplace you can go, but
yeah,
it's not. You can't get drafted there.
No,
and
no
one Desi, can. Desi himself was drafted.
You want
to talk about that a little bit? We have discussed this a little bit because obviously milk.
Yeah,
this is where we got it from.
It's getting carried away. And here's the thing: we're going to discuss milk later on in this episode too, because it plays a little role later.
All right, but. Okay, yeah. So he was drafted in 1943, but I don't know if we mentioned this, but he had injuries to his knee.
Yeah, he did. And that's why he was doing kind of the performance type, enlistment.
Classified for limited service.
Right.
United States Army.
Performing with I think a lot of the Hollywood, stars back then were enlisted to do.
Part of the USO, the United Service Organization.
Mm-hmm.
So he was actually at the military hospital in San Fernando Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And William Frawley, I couldn't find anything. Don't know if he was. I don't think he was. I couldn't find any military history on him. But that's different for Fred Mertz.
Yes.
In 1918, joined the army as a doughboy, World War One. He went over to France for 3 weeks. He traveled both to and from France by boat. And that's, I guess, why he has his seasickness. But
someone put a little too much yeast in that doughboy, I think.
But it is only in there for 3 weeks. And mm-hmm. he always like talks about like what I was in. He doesn't always talk about it. But I feel like when he talks about it, it seems like it was longer than 3 weeks.
Right.
He was also a corporal in the army.
So he got a letter.
They read this letter that just states that he needs to be a peer there. But if my husband got a letter, say my husband was healthy and he got a letter from the U.S. Army, because the U.S. Army wouldn't want him. But if...
Okay. Sorry, mister.
You can't have like chronic diseases and join the mm-hmm. army. If he was healthy and we were going through a period of drafting
mm-hmm.
and he got a letter and I opened it and read it, I may assume that he got drafted into the army. Like, it was very much just like
the way it was written
at this time.
Right.
Very much in order.
Mm-hmm.
And so that part I could get. Fred joining the army, can't believe.
Yeah. And that's also what Ethel hits at later in the next scene is when they were knitting, is how that's not possible. That perhaps
he must have enlisted.
They're not that, as she says, hard up. It's like, damn, oh my goodness.
I love how Ethel's like, okay, you have to be brave. And then what, Lucy starts crying.
Yeah, they both burst into tears.
Is that being brave? It is for a coward.
It is for a coward. Yeah. So she cries after reading this letter, you know, that she assumes that he's being drafted. And what I love is that in order for her to get over, to get her mind off her troubles and to stop moping, you go get a new hat. And, you know, which is, you know, shopping always cures all, I suppose, for getting out of the moping stage. Ricky and Fred are in the next scene where he kind of knows the gossip already from, you know, what's interesting that when Ricky is checking the mail, do you remember when we were talking about men are messy, how he comes in and just destroys the desk to look at mail? Here's where we see a human looking at mail like you would. And he's checking his mail at the desk real calmly. So Fred already knows the gossip that he's,
of course,
you know, received this postcard about the starfish because Ethel. And then he tells him about the letter he received and that it's not a drafting letter, but in fact, an invitation to perform, but they just speak that way.
He did a vaudeville act.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wants to show Ricky. And that's when he starts kind of like humming the Dixieland song.
Mm-hmm.
It's either Dixieland or Dixie. It's the most popular song from the South. It was written by Daniel D. Emmett of Ohio. Yay. Little shout out for Ohio. In 1859, Mr. Emmett was a member of Bryant's Furnish, a new song, Bryant's Minstrels, was playing in New York, and they asked him for a new song to be performed the following week, and so he came up with this, and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 1916, an entertainment was given to New Orleans. They really liked it. They started using it. And it just kind of became the inspirational song for the Confederate Army, which
used then. That's what he was humming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he was humming.
Yeah.
And so they don't go horribly into it at this point.
So the next scene after that is where they are, like you mentioned, Ethel and Lucy are, you know, emotional about this drafting that's taken place over this letter. And here's the thing. Yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry. Doesn't Lucy talk to Ricky first before that?
Oh, she does.
Because I thought it was really funny. She sews him the mourning hat that she bought.
Yeah, she has like a funeral hat on. Yeah.
And then you get that like really close up shot. I think this is one of
the lighting.
We talked about it in the last episode. Yeah, but mm-hmm. it was one of those close up shots, and this time it was of Ricky.
When she says it looks really cute, when she says that the hat looks really cute,
he doesn't even know.
Yeah. So she just bursts into tears, and he's kind of confused as to why she's so emotional.
But then we go to Ethel's.
Right. And here's the thing, you know, they're at the table together, Lucy and Ethel, and they're knitting things for them. But what I love is that they just assumed, ran with it, and never discussed it with each other, with the husbands. I mean, all of this crying and you know, I mean, of course, otherwise we wouldn't have an episode.
My husband, I'd be like, yo.
Yeah, you're not going to go next door, cry with your neighbor, knit some hats and tents and and assume that all is lost, you know, and you know, already be proud of the service that they are not about to embark on.
Yeah.
So they're
knitting. Did you notice that Ethel and Lucy are drinking from an ivory print tea set?
I have not. Those are the types of things you zero in on.
Listen, my question is, did Lucy bring over the set, or do the merchants have the exact same set that the Ricardos have?
Well, when you're best friends like that, maybe you share things.
Or maybe, well, I'm just going to bring over a teapot.
It's going to leave it there.
Because you don't have teapot, obviously. But at that time, when you bought something for your kitchen, you bought a whole set. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if anyone else has one. I do not have a full set in my house. Like, I've got plates and bowls and mugs that match. But they're like chipping and dying, and throw some of the oil away.
Yeah.
They weren't great. But like, this was like a full kitchen set. So you'd get like the plates, the dessert plates, the tea kettle, the salt, like the sugar. Like, it was everything. So to think that you would, if my best friend liked something, doesn't mean I would like it. And then also have the entire, you know,
set,
kitchen set as well. But maybe they're just.
You've really thought about this. I mean, I'm fascinated just watching you. You really thought about this. Stuff
that like comes up to my mind. Listen, this is what happens when you've watched them more than once. Because when you watch them for like the first few times, you're like, oh, that's just a great show. And then as I keep watching, I'm like, do toasters really pop that high?
Yeah. What's with the shoes? What's with the shoes? What's going on there? Why are you wearing that? Yeah.
What is this?
So knitting, do you knit?
I don't.
Okay, good. Then I don't feel so bad.
Yeah. I used to a little bit, teeny bit, but I never, it's not that I didn't have the patience, but
I most definitely don't have the patience. Yeah, I most definitely do not have the patience.
I was like, of the things that I like doing, I already have hobbies. I don't want to learn this.
Yeah, so like crocheting and knitting. Yeah.
I didn't have the patience to learn it, or if I didn't have the patience to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe both, but I don't. I don't knit.
So they started the idea of sending them getting them gifts, making them gifts. And of course, Lucy doesn't know how to knit. So what she thinks is a sock is really looking like a stocking or a blanket. And so eventually she says it looks like a tent, more like a tent.
Ethel said that. I was like, okay, that's a bit extreme. That isn't big enough for a baby. Like, it's not even a baby blanket yet. Like,
yeah, Ethel was feisty in this episode a little bit. Yeah. And so
they're talking.
Yeah.
Right. And Ethel says you have to keep stiff upper lip.
Yeah. Which is a really, really British thing to do, is what I understand, is having a stiff, you know, here we cry on cue just about, you know, the wind blows and we'll just cry. And, you know, I think it's a very British thing to say, have a stiff upper lip and just not let things bother you. So they both burst into tears.
History.
Of course you do.
Of course I do. I'm trying to do more. Okay. I'm trying to be better at this.
Let's do it.
I feel like I want you guys to think that like I've thought through some stuff.
Well, not only that, I mean, yeah, talking about the episodes is fun. We've all seen them, but I love learning the, you know, backstories, history, and here we are.
Okay. So to keep a stiff upper lip means obviously to be just stoic, to display fortitude and restraint. And we knew that. I think we all knew that.
Yeah.
But the phrase keep a stiff upper lip refers, I just said that, one's face in an unemotional deadpan fashion. The expression keep a stiff upper lip was popularized by the novel Stiff Upper Lip by Jeeves, a P.G. Wodehouse, and publishing in 1963. So there's actually a book
Called
that. And it was an American thing, and now people assume that it's a very British thing. So it's
which is what changed. I just said. Yeah,
it is. I know. I was like, So okay. So they go through this thing. I love how Ethel keeps bringing up the fact that she thinks it's a tent. Like, they keep talking, but then they're back. Ricky and Fred are back in the house, and Ricky's concerned. He like can't keep his mind off on their
on the rehearsing. Yeah,
rehearsing because. Mm-hmm. He's saying that Lucy is acting strange. And
how can you tell?
Yeah, it's strange. How can you tell? I just love when Fred says things like that.
Yeah.
Like, strange for Lucy or strange for everyone?
Yeah, for regular people. So because he can't concentrate on the rehearsal that they're both, you know, trying to pull off for this military show. And he says, what's the matter with you? You've been kind of, you know, spacey, I guess. And he tells him that, you know, Lucy, she burst into tears. She's, you know, knitting little things and hiding them behind her. Of course, those two things combined means you must be pregnant. And so Fred, of course,
when you were pregnant,
I never knitted. Knitting, you don't knit. Emotional.
Yeah, did you just break into tears?
You know, anyone who knows me will say, should I bust out to tears over anything? Just
normally?
Yeah, just normally. I mean, I'm watching TikTok videos of dogs and cats and babies, oh, and I'm just a mess. So I was
definitely more emotional.
No, definitely.
Sure, but I didn't hit anything. So, and then that comes to the thought that, again, they wouldn't tell their husbands that they were pregnant.
Again. No communication in those two households.
Also,
yeah,
Jeffrey Mark Fettelman, he's the author of the Lucy book. Mm-hmm. He kind of talks about how this is one of the few times we can kind of be sure that Ethel and Fred have some sort of sex life.
Because he accepts
he just possibility. Accepts it, right?
Yeah.
So like, Fred says Ricky's going to be a father. And Ricky's like a father, and Fred keeps explaining it, right? And he's like, well, Ethel is this way too, but I don't. And then it hits him that, like, oh no, she must be pregnant too.
One thing we're going to say about Ricky and Fred is they are not physicians, and they certainly leapt into conclusion, fell off the cliff with that one because, and then he says, me, father. Yes, no, you, father. Yes. Lucy, mother, me, Tarzan. That was funny. And so,
it's all about the like pregnancy reveals and stuff.
So yeah.
This wouldn't be a thing, but like all the videos and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel bad. I did not do that. I just like handed him the pregnancy test and walked away.
I walked away. You didn't even stay for the reaction.
No, I was there. But listen, I thought he knew because our cat was like, he was just very clingy. And Colin kept saying like, oh, you're pregnant. So I was like, he knows. It's not a surprise to him. So I was just confirming what
his suspicions.
Knew, but apparently he didn't. I was like, I missed a chance, but... I was like, I have no cute story to tell. I handed it to
him. Yeah, now everything is really much more exaggerated than before. Even asking someone to the prom is just, it's a whole production. So don't feel bad. It's you're normal, that's what it means. And
so because both of these two parties jumped to conclusions, they decided to have parties first. Fred and Ricky, decide to have a baby shower.
Yeah. And then a going away party. And here's the thing is they both plan separate celebrations. Again, this is why this episode bothers me. Just we're already jumping into celebrations and no one is communicating in these two households.
Right. Most definitely for a bridal shower, you confirm. Or not a bride. I'm sorry.
Baby shower.
A baby shower. You confirm the woman you're throwing the shower for is actually pregnant.
You imagine you walk into a place, surprise, you're going to be a mother.
What?
Really? First of all, are you insulting me? Are you, you know, because if someone randomly walks up to you and congratulates you and you just had it's just a big lunch. I mean, so just the idea that they're throwing a big party without even confirming it is, and how quickly they threw this party together, by the way, both of them.
Oh, yeah. Both of them.
So
it's, I mean, but also, like, is it a part? They did not do anything other than invite people over. Like, there was no decorations. There were no there was no food in sight. There was no drinks in sight. They just were like, come on over, bring presents, and we'll stuff you in a closet. So
yeah, and these guests that they invited, of course, like always, you would use the names of real friends of theirs, real mm-hmm. life friends. And so yeah. Here we have the Sedgwicks, the Ursadis, and the Buzels or Buzels.
The Buzels.
And taken Edward from Buzel. Desi and Lucy's real life friends' names. And they did that a lot when they're in the country, and they were also going to throw a housewarming party, and they named off last names. They were all same friends as in real life.
Can we talk about who they were a little bit?
Sure.
Do you know? Do you want to lead this?
No, go on. No, go on.
Okay. Edward Buzel is the director. He directed Lucy's 1943 Best Foot Forward. Victor Orsatti. So the last names are the ones that mm-hmm. made it into the show. It's the name of the Arnaz's neighbors and fellow producer in The Visitor from Italy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ed Sedgwick mm-hmm. Tutored Lucille Ball in comedy when she had first arrived in Hollywood.
I love that.
And oh wait, he gave away the bride at Lucy and Desi's 1949 church wedding.
Oh nice.
That's pretty big.
And then,
yeah, the letter from Fox Fort Dix is signed by Commander Morris Thompson, and Maury Thompson was the script clerk and the camera coordinator for I Love Lucy. So yes. They just really mm-hmm. put in a lot of people that they knew, which I think is really cool.
And when Ricky and Fred were performing for the troops, just, you know, a quick aside, it was referenced for the Korean War, which was happening at the time, because Korean War was June 25th, 1950 through July 27th, 1953. So that's what this was in reference to. Okay. And so,
of course, they could have technically been drafted at this point.
They technically could have, yes.
Well, and not Fred. He's like 60 something. He's out of the range. But I believe that technically Desi Arnaz would have been in the range of draftees at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If he hadn't have already served, like, you know, we're talking about.
And so, of course, like we said, cut to Ethel and Lucy in the bathroom getting dressed, and still no one has addressed why these two women are in these fancy cute dresses all dressed up. No one's addressed why. What? No one communicates. And no, so no. Yeah, they're getting ready for the going away party,
right? So they can pretend like they can't talk because of that,
right?
And both the men and women decide they're not gonna argue.
Right. When they, yeah, to be nice to one another because each has something else going on. So they're all in the living room, and this is just so they leave the doors unlocked, or at least they think they did, so the guests can sneak in the front door. And that didn't happen because Ricky locked it. And so when someone knocks, they're trying to get the boys out of there by asking for water.
Water.
And they're all acting weird and nervous around each other. It was almost like this is the first time they're all meeting, and they're all kind of shy around each other.
First date. Like,
what is happening here?
So you remember how we talked about how William Frawley didn't learn anyone else's lines except his own?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of see it's not really a mistake, but it's, three people responded because they knew what was supposed to happen and one person didn't. So William Frawley as Fred did not respond to the knock on the door because he didn't understand the joke.
I see.
So okay. He was the only person who didn't understand that, like, this is a big thing. Like, oh crap. Like, it's a
let's
big
react.
Moment.
Let's react.
We have to react. Mm-hmm. So you see, you know, Lucy's and Ethel's and Ricky's eyeballs. Eyes and Fred's mm-hmm. just like, standing there.
Yeah,
like,
because he didn't bother to read what everybody else is doing.
You can see how that kind of So the men go get water, and then Hazel Pierce comes in, who is the first guest.
Friend of Lucille Ball's
camera and light stand-in for the next two decades.
She makes a frequent background ton of appearances in many episodes.
So, I mean, she's a big person. She's the first person to come in. And, of course, they stuff her in
a closet. She's like folded in. She comes in with her husband or someone.
Mm-hmm. She comes in with someone else. But.
Yeah, they're folded into the closet, which looks extremely uncomfortable because, I mean, it's a tiny little coat closet. And so, of course, when they hear that someone's in the back porch door to get rid of them, here's where I think Ziva's going to stand on her soapbox about, oh, honey, you need to go powder your nose. And she immediately, I could see it. I could see her reaction. And immediately they're like, oh, okay. You're unhappy with my shiny nose.
So, could you just imagine your husband being like, you don't look good enough. Go fix yourself.
Your nose is too shiny. It's That's distracting. That's
literally what they're saying. Yeah. He's like, I can see myself. Whoa.
And
back up.
So you just go back up to your bathroom and powder your nose.
Yeah, I get like small things. Like I get like you have food in your teeth. Tell them that.
Oh, that's you different. Know,
their
yeah.
dress is up. Like there's something big. Mm-hmm.
Lipstick on your teeth or something. Yeah, tell them.
But don't be like, you know what, your makeup is not on point today. Go fix it. You know, like who are you, sir?
So what I love is that they don't want to disagree because they're leaving. You know, they're leaving. They're being drafted, like the army or the baby sign, the salute.
And yeah. you forgot to mention that the men bring the girls milk.
They do bring the milk. Yes, I did make a huge note of that.
Why is milk something you bring pregnant women? I think we've already talked about this. But when I was pregnant, milk was not something that I was like, yes, gotta must have more of that.
Yeah, you're producing enough of it. I don't need you to bring any more. I have.
No one wants more milk.
Sorry to the men listening to this. It's a little TMI, but this is what happens.
You know, it's a woman's body. It's fine. It's what happens.
Yeah. So they bring in milk, and they're both surprised. Like, what's with the milk? And of course, it's because pregnant women. You know, just exclusively drink milk. And so they're baffled as to why they're doing that. And so they don't question it. They drink it.
Did you notice they're drinking out of metal cups? Do you know anyone that has metal cups anymore?
I have steel cups.
Okay. These were aluminum glasses.
Yeah.
I think. I'm guessing that's probably what they were. And I know people who had them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had family members who had them. But I don't know of anyone that currently has them. But you can buy them on Amazon. You can, like, look up.
Interesting.
I don't know, retro old cups, and, like, you can get some. But I honestly loved how drinking milk from them, it kept, because the glass gets really cold and chilled.
Yeah.
So it keeps the drink,
right.
milk or whatever, cold and chilled. Without having to put like ice in something. So if it's already chilled before you put it in there, it helps keep it chilled.
Yeah. And so I think that's why they, throughout the entire time that someone is being served something, I do notice those types of cups all the time. So they are being, you know, rushed to go powder their nose while they rush more guests through the kitchen and squeeze them into the closet with the other guests that, you know, belong to Lucy and Ethel. And, when they come back out, they again hearing more people come in. So it's another excuse to get more milk.
The same excuse. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lucy has to like chug what's left.
Yeah. You haven't finished this one yet. Yeah.
Oh, there's two bluebirds. Ready? Do you know what they are? You know what I'm going to say?
Mm-mm.
So when Ethel, this is the second time they're asking for milk. Ethel's asking for milk. You hear a very distinct change in audio quality when she says, I must have had something salty for dinner. You can listen to it.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that they probably
dubbed it in.
Yeah. Because you can hear, you know, and she didn't have to speak. You didn't have to match her words because the camera was on Ricky the whole time. Mm-hmm. But then the second blooper is from when they're putting in, I think it's like the fifth of the six guests that they're wedging in the closet. Mm-hmm. And when he's holding the pole, it comes down. Ooh, I hit my ear. It comes down and you can see it like breaks or like comes loose or something. And by the time they open it again, it's fixed. But I'm just like, you know, if you're pulling on that pole, obviously.
Yeah.
So that was a little blooper. But anyways.
And, yeah. When the guests come in after they go ahead and leave again to get more milk. And what I love that behind them, when either party is trying to say, you know, don't fight with them because remember pregnant and remember they're going off to the military. It's very obvious they're doing it right in front of them. I mean, right. Again, you have to suspend reality, common sense, your eyeballs, all the things, because that's why this episode bothers me a bit.
I say this to my husband sometimes, definitely if I really like something, mm-hmm. I'll be like, I like this episode, please suspend disbelief. Mm-hmm. I like this show, don't ruin it for me.
Don't break the fourth wall and tell me what's really happening. Yeah.
Just let me suspend disbelief. So both of them are getting tired. The men are getting tired of getting milk and the women are tired of powdering their noses. So the women come back out first, right? And they come back out with the cups.
With the cones, to be funny. They're being...
like the little cups that you put in the bathroom to drink, to swish out your mouth and stuff. So they're to be funny, right? And then the men bring out the big, huge pitchers of milk.
Part
of me was like, all right, you could have just brought out one pitcher of milk. I think that would have been enough to be funny.
This other part, which is another... slam against a female, is, you know, they're all laughing, you know, about the cones and stuff. And while they're all laughing, you know, Ricky says, I'm glad you didn't lose your sense of humor. Why would we lose our sense of humor? Well, you know, because women in your condition usually aren't in the best of moods. I think you have a thing or two to say about that. But,
there's a lot of misconceptions when it mm-hmm. comes to pregnant women. Every pregnant woman is different in all reality. It's not even a soapbox. It's just like, men, if you're listening, to inform you, everyone's different. So you can't just be like, oh, this is going to be, and you know, in a lot of these shows, you know, I was just watching Bewitched and Samantha's pregnant and Darren's like, she's fine. You know,
yeah,
got to build it up. Like I was working up until the week before I was pregnant, the week before I had my baby, before I had Apollo. So like I was working. And so some women do that, but some women can't. And so like, there's a whole, like, all women are different. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So anyways.
And so when he says, Lucille asks, why would we have lost our sense of humor? Desi or Ricky hums, mm-hmm. There's a brand new baby at our house, to kind of tell, you know, and do the little rocking motion with his hands.
Which he wrote for his daughter.
Right. And so he does play that song when she gives birth to little Ricky on the show. But it, mm-hmm. again, it was written for Lucy Arnaz. And he hums that. And so they're all kind of like, what? Nobody's pregnant. No one's expecting a child.
And then the men are like, don't look at us.
Yeah. And so no one's pregnant. And so
then they go through, then they finally have a conversation, right? The women are like, we're not pregnant. We thought you were drafted.
Right.
And the men were like, oh, let us show you our routine. So of course they don't even fully say, nope, we're not drafted.
No, it's just, here's what we're doing.
Let's show us here.
After the performance and the laughing, and I can't believe we all got it wrong. Then they remember that they squished all these people into the closet.
So they have to get them out of the closet.
And they look so uncomfortable. They all look like they're folded like a Tetris game. It's just so... I think you're too young to know what a Tetris game is.
Me? I know what Tetris is.
Okay, good.
Oh, What the heck?
Listen, I'm from a childhood where you blow on Nintendo games to get them to work. Okay.
Listen, we had flip phones. I used to do that. We had Nintendo games. You go,
yeah.
Yeah. Cartridge. Yeah.
And magically it works.
Yeah, of course. And then we had flip phones, and Tetris was always on flip phones.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or Game Boys. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways.
Just aged ourselves.
That's the end of it, right? They get the people out. They all laugh about how silly they've been, blah, blah, blah. They see a little bit of their Stonewall Ricardo. And
you can understand why I'm not a big fan of this episode.
I understand. I was actually just reading a teeny bit of like what I wrote, and I saw I love this episode. I was like, I don't remember thinking that, but before that, I said that this kind of shows up, the whole idea of being drafted shows up again during the time of the Vietnam War, which was when Lucy gets caught up in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the Lucy show?
What's that? I Love Lucy.
Yeah, it's the Here's Lucy, or the Lucy show. And the government thought Lucy Carmichael was actually Lou C. Carmichael.
Oh,
like L-O-U.
Yeah.
First name C. Carmichael. And she goes through all this training. And I love it. And I love it that they're like, well, we can't do anything about it. We have to talk to higher ups. Like, I've talked to them. I've been part of that. I was in the Young Marines when I was younger. And there's a very, very clear, like, we have to wait for the people above. We can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Let us talk to the people. And that is the episode I love, because she actually has to go to training, and I think it's really funny.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. But anyways, yes, this is the end of the episode, and we talked about the little tag. So this, you said, you know, this aired Christmas Eve 1951.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that little tag scene where there's the four main cast members are all dressed like Santa, and then they're like, oh, there's a fifth, Saint Nicholas.
Right.
Who's the real Saint? The real Santa. He was played by Vernon Dent. He had more than 40 movie and TV credits between 1919 and 1957. He's also a staple foil in the Three Stooges, but he went through, I mean, he was in a lot of things. So
this is the one where they tug on the beards to see which one is the real Santa.
I don't know if it's the exact same thing or something very similar, but it's used many times. And it's the basis of the official Christmas special.
Mm-hmm. And I think Lucy, Lucy herself had said that she didn't like using this one as often, because, you know, not running it throughout the year, because it only makes sense, of course, during Christmas time. So she wasn't a fan of having it run year round like the others do. But
they did cut the tag from it when it's mm-hmm. played.
Yeah.
Like, even in the DVD, you don't see that tag. Like,
yeah, it wasn't rebroadcast for syndication or anything. So that was, I do like that one. It's been a while since I've seen that little Christmas episode. And also the one with, later on when little Ricky is a part of it. And
yeah,
they do the Christmas special.
There's a lot. We will actually, I can say this, right? Because mm-hmm. we're planning Christmas. On it.
Yeah.
We're going to do the Christmas special for Christmas. So it's going to be a jump ahead, because obviously we'll not be at season 6 by Christmas time.
But of 2023. At this rate.
Jump ahead. We will do the Christmas episode, and we can air it that week sometime during Christmas. And then we can have it aired, so we can have a break and be with our families and stuff during Christmas. But it'll be fun. It'll be really fun. So I don't know. We just have a lot of fun talking about all of this stuff. If you, I'm serious. If you like the extra information, these last two episodes have been very information heavy. So if you don't like it, let me know. I may or may not, probably won't change it, but I'll keep it in mind if a lot of people don't like it.
Yeah.
If we get a lot of emails that are like, yo, stop it. I'll stop it. But I think it's interesting. It brings,
it's from me.
Erica,
just stop it.
Thank you.
No, I love hearing from people because I think it's there. We're getting much more communication now, of course, as time goes on. And we welcome that because we'll answer you on Instagram, Facebook, email, you know, anything, because we're up for learning. And we have, especially lately, you know, there seems to be a lot more interest in all of this Lucy related. And we're not just doing episodes. As you can see, the reason we're only on this episode is because, you know, we do interviews, we talk about spotlights and guest stars and, you know, just a lot of fun behind the scenes stuff that happens with Lucio Ball and Desi Arnaz, anything related.
I'm so sorry. I meant to say that I think we need to do a spotlight on Hazel Pierce.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know,
yes,
we brought her up. She's come up. This is the second time we've mentioned her specifically, I think. And I think we need to get on that. But
yeah, thanks, guys, for listening. We are at Having a Ball Pod on Instagram, Having a Ball Podcast on Facebook. And our email is havingaballpod@gmail.com.
Yes. Email us with any questions, concerns, trivia,
suggestions,
like hopes, suggestions.
Be dreams, nice.
You know. Be nice. Yeah. You read them.
Thanks, right, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.